Greetings and salutations, and welcome back to Colin's Last Stand right here on YouTube. My name is Colin Moriarty. I appreciate you being here with me today. A special thank you to all my Patreon supporters over at patreon.com/Colin's Last Stand. You make this dream possible, this dream of politics and history, and Lola sleeping in the corner. She's sleeping in the corner in the sun. So she's living the life because of all of you out there as well. I wanted to let you guys all know, just because the Jersey Mike's saga continues unabated, that Aaron had found a deli near that Jersey Mike's. It's called Bay Cities Deli, and it just shits all over everything. So the Jersey Mike's scenario, the fiasco, it's over. It's done with. I'm all about this Bay Cities Deli, man. I'm telling you, this place is fucking phenomenal. They got the Boar's Head Meats and the Gardenera, and that's all I care about. That's all I care about in this life, is those fucking hot peppers and that pepper turkey and that extra mayonnaise. Anyway, enough of that. Today I wanted to talk to you guys about impeachment in the United States, specifically what the word actually means and how it's been used in the past in the United States, and where kind of this idea comes from that you can impeach a federal official or an elected official, or in the case that's being spoken about a lot now, the president of the United States. And I feel like with the way I'm seeing people use the word impeachment, lots of folks don't seem to have any idea what it actually means or entails. They have the general idea right, but they don't have the procedure right, and they certainly don't seem to know where it comes from. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that in a more brief Colin's Last Stand video today. Brief by my measures, probably still gonna be like 15 minutes long, so don't worry. And I also wanna talk to you guys a little bit about how impeachment has been used in the past on presidents. It's been used twice in the past, so we're gonna get into that a little bit as well. So I hope you find this video instructive and interesting. I know that my audience here is into politics. It's, you guys are into history, so you probably know a lot of this, but maybe you don't. Maybe it's a nice refresher for you, or maybe it's going to be a nice video for you to share with friends and family that are throwing around that dreaded I word with reckless abandon. So as I said, the word impeachment is being used a lot right now because of what Donald Trump has or has not done in regards to the Russian and James Comey and obstruction of justice and whatever is going on. As is usually the case, I have no idea what's really going on because I don't really trust the media. I don't really trust either political party. I don't trust Donald Trump. I don't trust anyone involved. So for all I know, he can be guilty of every crime launched his way, or he can be guilty of nothing at all and really be the victim of what he would call a witch hunt. I don't really know. I'm going to let Mr. Mueller figure that out, the old FBI director that's in charge of this one independent investigation that has to do with Russia and all this kind of stuff. This doesn't really even have to do with the other things, the obstruction of justice, all this kind of shit. It's very muddy. I don't even want to talk about Donald Trump. Let's just talk about impeachment. The first thing you need to know about impeachment is that even though we use it here in the United States in regards to the president, it can be used in regards to lots of different federal officials and elected officials. It can be used against senators and House members. It can be used against cabinet appointees. It can be used even against judges. And in fact, it's been used against judges the most in American history. The big thing here is that impeachment, the word impeachment or the term impeachment or the act of impeachment, doesn't have anything to do with guilt. I think when a lot of people throw that word around, they're basically thinking, let's impeach Donald Trump. That means let's remove him. That's not what it means. That's not actually at all what it means. The right of impeachment comes from the U.S. Constitution in three different sections, and I'm going to read them to you verbatim so you have an idea of what they say, and then we'll go into a little bit of what they mean, what we can draw out of it. Article 1, Section 2, Clause 5 of the U.S. Constitution states the following, quote, "The House of Representatives shall choose their speaker and other officers and shall have the sole power of impeachment," end quote. So that's the first piece of the puzzle. That's the first piece of the impeachment puzzle, but there's way more. So here's the next part. Article 1, Section 3, Clauses 6 and 7 state, quote, "The Senate shall have the sole power to try all impeachments. When sitting for that purpose, they shall be on oath or affirmation. When the President of the United States is tried, the Chief Justice shall preside, and no person shall be convicted without the concurrence of 2/3 of the members present. Judgment in cases of impeachment shall not extend further than to removal from office and disqualification to hold and enjoy any office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States. But the party convicted shall nevertheless be liable and subject to indictment, trial, judgment, and punishment according to law," end quote. So that's a big thing right there, and we'll get into that in just a moment, but there's a third part. Article 2, Section 4 states, quote, "The president, vice president, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, and other high crimes and misdemeanors," end quote. So that's a lot. Right there, I think. Although it really isn't. Here's what it basically says. that if you're a public office holder at the federal level, the federal Congress, meaning the House and the Senate, can bring impeachment charges upon that person, whether it's the president, whether it's a senator, a House member, the secretary of whatever, a federal judge, a federally appointed judge, etc., and so on. They can bring charges against a person in the following way. The House of Representatives brings charges of impeachment. They are the ones that vote initially to impeach the president. So when you say, I'm going to impeach someone, or someone is being impeached, it's because the House of Representatives in this case has voted to impeach a person. That means in this case that charges are being brought up against that person in terms of federal legality. So it doesn't mean criminal charges are being brought up against the person. It literally means that they're being charged in terms of the scope of their office and whether they should hold that office based on their conduct. That's part one. Part two is now the House kicks it to the Senate. The Senate tries the person. So the Senate acts as prosecutor and they act as jury, basically. And at the end, they vote. If the vote is two-thirds or higher, that person is automatically removed. If the two-thirds threshold isn't met in the Senate, then nothing happens to that person. The big thing here is one of the points that I was making that I think is often overlooked. These, again, aren't criminal charges, and the Constitution makes that very clear. What the Constitution does hold open, however, is that if a person is removed, or maybe even isn't removed constitutionally in terms of impeachment, let's say that a senator from state X is impeached for high crimes and misdemeanors, and we'll get into what that means in a minute, then that means that if they're voted two-thirds out by the Senate, they can still be charged in a criminal court for what they've done. This isn't a criminal court. The Senate doesn't have the right to do that. The term high crimes and misdemeanors is a very loose and ambiguous term. And I went to the Heritage Foundation. They have a nice little write-up on this. Here's what it says to just give you a little idea of kind of how it's interpreted. Quote, because high crimes and misdemeanors was a term of art used in English impeachments, a plausible reading supported by many scholars is that the grounds for impeachment can be not only the defined crimes of treason and bribery, but also other criminal or even non-criminal behavior amounting to a serious dereliction of duty. That interpretation is disputed, but it is agreed by virtually all that the impeachment remedy was to be used in only the most extreme situations, a position confirmed by the relatively few instances in which Congress has used the device, end quote. So that gives you a little idea of high crimes and misdemeanors and also their interpretation of how often or not often it should be used. And again, it's been used like fewer than 20 times at the congressional level, at the federal level. But I really want you to take away this one point here, which is impeachment by the House doesn't mean really anything other than that the Senate will then deem whether you're guilty of the charges being brought up. So think about it as like a grand jury kind of looking at things, and then they want to bring charges upon a person, and then that person is tried by another jury of their peers. So basically, the House can impeach you, but that doesn't mean anything until the Senate convicts you. And in terms of the President of the United States, well, this has happened two other times in our history before. A president has been impeached twice. A president has also resigned, Richard Nixon. But Richard Nixon wasn't impeached before he resigned. He was about to be impeached by the House of Representatives, but he wasn't. He resigned before he was impeached. And indeed, the two presidents that were impeached were both impeached, but not removed by the Senate. And I'm going to get into that now. So the two presidents that were impeached were Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton. And I think that the Andrew Johnson one is way more interesting. I'm going to spend more time on that because I just think it's way juicier, it's way more political, and in a lot of ways, it's way more fucked up. So what you need to know about this is that Andrew Johnson was Abraham Lincoln's vice president as of 1865. He was on the 1864 ticket. A guy named Hannibal Hamlin, actually from New England, was Abraham Lincoln's original running mate and was his vice president during his first term for that really meaty part of the Civil War. But Hamlin was removed in lieu of Andrew Johnson because at this point, the Union was anticipating a victory at some point. I don't know that they anticipated necessarily by early 1865, like April 1865, which is when it really happened, but they were anticipating imminent success, and they wanted to bring the South back into the fold. At least that was Lincoln's more moderate approach. So he chose a guy named Andrew Johnson, who was from the South. He was from Tennessee, and he was also a Democrat. Now, this is a big deal because the Democrats were the secessionists. The Democrats were the slaveholders. The Republican Party was founded largely to abolish slavery, and it was basically just more of the Progressive Party. I mean, there was way more to it than that, but they were the Progressive Party. So Andrew Johnson being a Democrat, Andrew Johnson being a Southerner, and Andrew Johnson replacing another vice president on the ticket for purely political reasons. He was also like the kind of military governor of a territory in the South during the Civil War. So he had some experience with Abraham Lincoln's government and the Republican-dominated government of the early 1860s. But there was a lot of politics at play with Andrew Johnson. He wasn't well-liked. The fact is that the Congress at the time were ruled by what were called at that point the Radical Republicans. And Abraham Lincoln and later Andrew Johnson, who took over for him when Abraham Lincoln was assassinated at Ford Theater in 1865, Abraham Lincoln wanted to bring the South in more peacefully. This was the 10% plan that I referred to in actually the Confederate video, which was the last video. Note that Robert E. Lee and Jefferson Davis and all these guys weren't hanged. They weren't really tried in military tribunals that brought them to prison for the rest of their lives or brought them to the gallows or ruined their lives. Quite the opposite, actually. And this wasn't something that a lot of Republicans in the Congress really wanted. But Andrew Johnson wanted it, as Abraham Lincoln wanted it. They wanted a Reconstruction that was more peaceful, and they thought that by bringing the Southerners into the fold more gradually and with a little more care, that the Union might be a little stronger and benefit more from that moving forward. But remember one of the very important things about congressional power. Congress can override a presidential veto with two-thirds of the vote in the House and the Senate. So typically when a piece of legislation is passed by the House, but by a majority in the House and a majority in the Senate, the president merely needs to sign the bill and it becomes law. But if he vetoes the bill and shoots it back to the legislature, they can override him and make something become law simply by voting two-thirds in the majority. And they've been doing that over and over again in the Congress. Andrew Johnson figured that he can retain some of what he wanted out of his own cabinet by removing the Secretary of War, a man named Edwin Stanton, and replacing him with another guy, a general actually named Lorenzo Thomas, who was more in line with what we'll call Johnson's more moderate politics. But this went against something called the Tenure of Office Act, and the House and the Senate didn't like Johnson overstepping his bounds. What the Tenure of Office Act basically said was that just as the Congress has to give advice and consent for cabinet appointments, specifically the Senate advising on appointments of the Secretary of War at the time, which is now the Secretary of Defense today, we don't have a Secretary of War anymore, or the Secretary of State or the Secretary of Treasury, so too should the Senate be advised before someone is removed. Well, Johnson didn't want to do that. He tried to remove Stanton and put Lorenzo Thomas in instead, and it blew up in his face. In March of 1868, the House impeaches Andrew Johnson on 10 counts, technically 11, but 10 individual counts. The 11th count is actually one that kind of encompasses all the other counts, basically accusing him of all sorts of things having to do with the Tenure of Office Act and kind of just flouting power and all this kind of stuff. But it was very politically driven, and the Republicans really did dominate the Congress at the time. It's not a huge surprise. The Democrats were a small minority party as the Southern states were slowly being allowed back into the Union with their own congressional delegations. An interesting wrinkle here is that the Constitution says that the President of the United States is being impeached, that the Chief Justice must preside over the proceedings, and so he did. Salmon Chase was a Republican and was the Supreme Justice and did preside over the case against Andrew Johnson, the Senate versus Andrew Johnson. But alas, this political ruse and this kind of very politically driven thing and something that a lot of people at the time felt was very unfair to Andrew Johnson, it was still something that went all the way through to the end. Andrew Johnson wouldn't resign, any of those kinds of things. And the Senate voted twice, actually, to try to get him out. And both times, the result was exactly the same. The Senate voted 35-19 in favor of keeping Johnson. And remember that that is a one-vote threshold because it's not a majority rule, it's two-thirds rule. So they're one vote off of removing Johnson. So Andrew Johnson survives. And then it's not until 1998 that Bill Clinton is impeached, very late in 1998, very late in December of 1998. Bill Clinton is impeached, and it's a little cleaner and a little easier to understand this time around as opposed to the Andrew Johnson impeachment, but just as, from my estimation, politically motivated. All of this has to do with Monica Lewinsky and the blowjobs, basically, that she was giving Bill Clinton as a young 20-something White House intern. And he lied about this several times. But the big lie that he told was under oath in a separate court case. You might remember a woman named Paula Jones who accused Bill Clinton of, at some point, sexually harassing her. In the depositions given for the Paula Jones case, Bill Clinton tells the lawyers that he didn't have an affair and had no sexual contact or conduct with Monica Lewinsky, which ends up being a lie. Of course, he admits this later on. There's the dress that's evidence that has his semen on it, basically, that can genetically associate him with Monica Lewinsky. So that whole thing blows up in his face. Remember that even though the 90s was a boom time in the US, it was still a very politically driven time. So the House of Representatives was taken over by the Republicans in 1994, And they were very adversarial with Bill Clinton for a long time. So the politics of this was always very transparent. And even people at the time knew that this was kind of bullshit. And Bill Clinton stayed in the race knowing that the Senate was never going to get to the two-thirds threshold. Even though the Republicans controlled the Senate at a similar ratio, actually, that they control it right now, they weren't going to reach the 67 votes now that were needed, since there are 100 senators, to remove him. So ultimately, the House voted 228 to 206 to bring charges against Clinton relating to his perjury, and then 221 votes to 212 votes to bring charges against him for his obstruction of justice. And I shouldn't say his perjury or his obstruction of justice, it's what he's being accused of. Remember, impeachment is the accusation and the bringing charges against. So the Senate ultimately votes on the perjury charge. It is 45-4 and 55 against, and on the obstruction of justice vote, it is 50-50. So Clinton was cleared. And with Andrew Johnson and with Bill Clinton, those are the two examples so far of the United States Congress in unison with the House and the Senate bringing charges for and trying a sitting president. So I hope this video was useful to you guys. I hope you enjoyed it. Again, just kind of a short instruction on what impeachment is, where it comes from in the Constitution, how it's been applied in terms of presidential kind of impeachments in the past. And that's basically it. So I hope you enjoyed it. Please give it a thumbs up. If you liked it, a thumbs down. If you didn't, leave a comment below. I'll try to interact with you guys down there. Please keep it respectful to me and to others. Let's keep it productive down there. Again, you can support me on Patreon if you'd like, but you don't have to. You can continue to enjoy. Please subscribe and share the video with your friends and family. And I will see you next time for Colin's Last Stand. Keep on learning.